Make the record, so.
There you go.
Okay.
All right. Do I have to start literally all over again? I'm Leslie Gray. I'm an alcoholic. I've had my last drink February 23rd, 1981, and so therefore I qualify because we don't know who's listening and what they've heard or not heard. So I'm here to talk about the 12 steps, and there's essentially three parts to it. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, number one. We carry the message to others, number two, and we practice these principles in all our affairs, number three. So this is something that I could talk. I'm a trained talker. I could probably talk one meeting each of the three phases of the step, but here we go. What is a spiritual awakening, then, we might ask? What does this mean? What does it look like? And I want to start with, again, one of my favorite books, As Bill Sees It, something that's been a go-to for me from the very beginning, and you'll see how beat up mine is compared to the ones, there's nice ones here. But on page 101, this is from A Grapevine, July 1962, the spiritual angle. How often do we sit in AA meetings and hear the speaker declare, quote, "I haven't yet got the spiritual angle." Prior to this statement, he has described a miracle of transformation which has occurred to him. Not only his release from alcohol, but a complete change in his whole attitude toward life and the living of it. It is apparent to everyone else present that he has received a great gift, and that this gift is out of all proportion to anything he may have expected from simple AA participation. So we in the audience smile and say to ourselves, well, that guy is just reeking with the spiritual angle, except he doesn't seem to know it yet. And so that's kind of where we begin. I mean, this a transformation in our way of living, our way of thinking, our way of reacting to life and meeting, you know, the challenges that life presents to us. The 12 and 12, another one of our basic books, talks about step 12, practicing this 12 steps in our daily lives, so that we come to a state of emotional sobriety, which I talked about a couple of weeks ago because there was a Bill quote about that. But and it goes on to also talk about a spiritual awakening. The big book at page 45, if you remember, I don't know if you remember, but I'll remind you. The whole purpose of the big book is to help us find a power greater than ourselves, to help us meet our problem with alcohol, to solve our problem. So to remind myself and others, lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves. And how were we to find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. So that's what this is for. That it's as simple and as complicated as that. But the step work, doing all the steps, all the weeks we've been here talking and studying and reading, or listening to me read, has been about the steps, and doing those steps brings us to this spiritual awakening and to a spiritual sobriety of some sort. But I want to tell you what, I keep bumping this is going to be crazy, what the 12 and 12 talks about. Maybe there are as many definitions of spiritual awakenings as there are people who have had them. But each genuine one has something in common with all the others. And these things which they have in common are not too hard to understand. The most important meaning of it is that he, meaning us, as we've worked our steps, has now become able to do, feel, and believe that which we could not do before on our unaided strength and resources alone. He has been granted a gift which amounts to a new state of consciousness and being. Life is not a dead end, not something to be endured or mastered. We find ourselves, I paraphrase only a little, in possession of a degree of honesty, tolerance, unselfishness, peace of mind, and love of which we had thought ourselves to be quite incapable. What we have received is a free gift, and yet usually, at least in some small part, we have made ourselves ready to receive it. AA's manner of making ready to receive this gift lies in the practice of the 12 steps in our program. And so the circle, you know, is completed. We do the steps. We become awake. We find a new way to live. I have thought and responded and done things I would not have thought myself capable, kind of starting with not taking a drink today. So I want to go to Joe McHugh also. I'm probably going to drive everybody, including myself, crazy with these books, but at page 151, he talks about a spiritual awakening, and he says that means our spirit has awakened. Our humanity is awakened. My humanity was kind of being anesthetized and dolled out and deadened, you know, through my drinking and the very poor way that I lived. And that the message is simple. We have a program that works. And he also kind of paraphrases about what these all have in common, our new way of thinking, believing, seeing, understanding, and our ability to do things we couldn't have done on our own strength, and to receive God's direction. And that's where, you know, last week the prayer and meditation and opening up that ear, that listening ear, the meditating and waiting for that intuitive moment, that inspiration. That's where we start to receive our gifts. But this is what he talks about, and Joe McHugh in this book describes it very well. We have to be careful, though. We can't make other people willing. Our experience is what we have to carry and share with people. The fact that we have had a profound and deep change in the way that we live our life and understand things and do things. That's what we have to share. And that's the message that we carry. So, now going on to carrying the message, I'm doing this in warp speed because I could talk a lot about some of this other stuff. But the big book, you know, when we talk about carrying the message and we talk about 12-step work and, you know, there's a lot in the big book about that. And that's the whole, the whole chapter of working with others. What the big book starts by telling us is this: practical experience. So that means all the things that you and me see and do and watch others do and have experienced. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when all other activities fail. You can secure, we have that special place. We can gain someone's confidence because we know them, because we are them. That's what got me. No one was preaching to me. No one was therapizing me or telling me what they learned in graduate school or some crap. They were telling me what they had lived, what they had experienced, what they had done to get them past, you know, that awful agony of drinking, you know, when we get to that jumping off point. And the book talks about that, you know, when we can't get drunk and we can't get sober and we don't want to live and we don't want to die, and it's just, you know, that's where our disease takes us. And it talks about this as an experience you should not miss. And there's a lot about that. But what is important is this. And the big book says it again and again and again. And I'm going to say it again and again and again. If our prospect, our pigeon, our baby, you know. If he does not want to stop drinking, don't waste time trying to persuade him. The book's very clear about this. Again and again, we have a program for people who want it, who are willing to work it. You heard it read to you a few minutes ago in How It Works, you know. Half measures avail us nothing. You know, we stood at the turning point, you know, complete abandon. Rigorous honesty. So the book talks about don't deal with him when he is very drunk, unless he is ugly and the family needs your help. Wait for the end of the spree, or at least for a lucid interval. I want to mention this too, because this book was written years ago. In our current world, for good or ill, we have almost outsourced our 12-step calls to detox centers and hospitals. When I came into the rooms and I was the new person, the old-timers, who were the old-timers then, they did 12-step calls. I was taken on some then, but not a lot because I was real new. But they, you know, raw drunks, ready, you know, who were detoxing, and there was whole, they talked about the whole thing about getting someone through to where their brain was cleaned up a little bit to understand, even, you know, about feeding people periodic drinks. The book talks about, like, maybe you keep whiskey in the house for someone who might seize up if they don't get like a shot every hour or something and start to taper down. But they would talk about K-Ro syrup and paraldehyde and vitamin B12 shots, and we did that stuff. You know, AA did that, used to do that stuff. Now we let other people do it, like I said, for good or for ill, you know. It's less messy, but we don't see the ugly end of alcoholism as much as we used to and don't benefit from it. And the last time I went on, I got a call from someone to go on a 12-step call. It was a couple of years ago. And the person was drunk. And, you know, this is why we don't do it when you're drunk, and why if you do go on a 12-step call, don't go alone. Because you might end up drinking with the person instead of, you know, getting them to a meeting or getting them to a hospital or starting to get them situated to, you know, come down off of whatever. But what was it? Orange juice, K-Ro syrup, honey, and sometimes interspersed with shots of whiskey was what they used to do way back in the day. It sounds disgusting, doesn't it? But that's, alcoholism is disgusting. It, you know, our symptoms are not pretty. So it talks about, again, and then it repeats, quote, at page 90, if he does not want to see you, never force yourself upon him. So, you know, tell him enough about your drinking habits and symptoms to encourage him to speak about himself, and if he wishes to talk, let him do so. Let him draw his own conclusions. Continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness, a fatal malady. So, you know, we're about laying out the facts. You know, as we carry the message, we talk about what happened to us. We talk about that we know our disease is fatal. We tell him exactly what happened to us. We can tell our whole story. Stress the spiritual feature freely, the big book tells us. If the man be agnostic or atheist, make it emphatic that he does not have to agree with your conception of God. He can choose any conception he likes, provided it makes sense to him. The main thing is he be willing to believe in a power greater than himself, and that he be willing to live by spiritual principles. And then we talk about the program of action and what you do, you know, and how you straightened out your life and explain why you're here. Because we're really there to help us, to help ourselves. That's part of our bottom line. That was my first words. That's their first words. Nothing so much ensures immunity from the next drink as working with others. Make it clear, again, he's not under pressure to talk to you again. So these early AAs, they were about, we didn't beg people to go to rehab. We didn't do any. It was, here it is. You're, you know, I was a mess. This is what I did. And the fact of your presence and that you're usually clean and lucid speaks for itself, you know, that you're healthy and willing to be of assistance. Your candidate may give reasons why he need not follow all the program. Anyone heard that before? Anyone offer those excuses or reasons why we don't need to follow the program? He may rebel at the thought of the drastic house cleaning. The book also makes very clear that, you know, I was taught to don't chase pigeons. You know, don't chase the pigeons. And my first sponsor's head pigeon, who she kind of delegated me to every so, you know, because she had not a lot of people to sponsor, I said, why don't you call me? She said, because I don't want what you have. She said, I had what you had. It sucked. It's like, okay. And I must have looked upset. And she said, oh, did I hurt your self-esteem? And then she started laughing. So that's how, you know, that's how it was. They didn't chase pigeons. And I do not, you know, if they want what we have, they'll do what we do. And my task is, you know, our duty, our to fulfill a 12-step obligation or responsibility, if you, is to give an honest presentation of the program, of who we are, what we do, how I was helped, you know, how my, you know, my experience, strength, and hope. That's really all we owe. The big book talks about this at page 95. If he is not interested in your solution, if he expects you to act only as a banker for his financial difficulties or a nurse for his sprees, you may have to drop him until he changes his mind. This he may do after he gets hurt some more. He should not be pushed or prodded by you, his wife, or his friends. If he is to find God, the desire must come from within. If he thinks he can do the job in some other way or prefer some other spiritual approach, encourage him to follow his own conscience. We have no monopoly on God. We merely have an approach that worked for us. But point out that we alcoholics have much in common and that you would like, in any case, to be friendly, and let it go at that. So that's kind of the big book's direction on how we do this. Offer the information, make ourselves available. Don't help the person hurt themselves by giving them money or, you know, something that's going to lead to not a happy result. And let it go. The book goes on as it describes, he may be broken homeless. If he is, you might try to help him about getting a job or giving a little financial assistance, but you should not deprive your family or creditors of money they should have. Permit that, and you only harm him. You will be making it possible for him to be insincere. You may be aiding in his destruction rather than in his recovery. So, you know, we can help somebody, you know, quote unquote, to death by doing for them what they should be doing for themselves. There's a way to be of service and help when help is needed, but, you know, something I've learned is, you know, if I do something for someone that they can and should do for themselves, I'm not helping them. I'm just allowing them to continue in their BS that is certainly not helping them. But for the type of alcoholic who is willing and able to get well, little charity in the ordinary sense of the word is needed or wanted. The men who cry for money and shelter before conquering alcohol are on the wrong track. So, and they say it so well, I'm going to just keep telling you from the book. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence on God. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trust in God and clean house. Now, as I got sober, I wasn't necessarily met with, you know, my family. They didn't care. And I had to, I guess we all confront, you know, there are people who are not necessarily cheerleading our recovery. And some who might even be trying to obstruct or help us to backslide. But none of that matters. If I believe this, I believe this, so I'm going to just say it. What I've found out is, like, if I'm going to get drunk, there is not you in an army that's going to stop me. And if I'm going to stay sober, there is not you in an army that's going to make me. And so that is between me and the God of my understanding. And if I have that, it doesn't matter what other people think of me or how they view me or my efforts to stay sober. This is between me and God and the 12 steps and the fellowship. But, you know, I think that's really one of the most profound truths in our book. You know, it's like, well, my wife didn't like it or whatever. You know, in the end, it's you. It's on you and God. So, helping doesn't always help. Deciding when, and then Joe McHugh, 152. He talks about. Oh, I'm losing my books here. I was taught about carrying the message, not the mess. Carrying the message, not the drunk. And that's kind of what they're talking here, too. He talks about, he said it pretty nicely, too, Joe McHugh. A lot of times we try to get people to believe who are not willing yet. This is something the individual has to do on his own. He has to go through his own suffering to become willing to change. And I'm not saying that that's an easy thing to watch, you know, and it's certainly not an easy thing to watch if the person involved is someone that we love and care about. Or a pigeon that we've worked with, you know, a baby who we've worked with and hoped for better things for. But we have to find our own path. You know, I had to make my mistakes, and really everyone has that opportunity and choice. But that's our message, you know. Our responsibility is to carry the message. What others do with it is not our responsibility. That's Joe McHugh's words. I'll say that again. This is our message, and it is simple. Our responsibility is to carry the message. What others do with it is not our responsibility. And he also makes a note, we want to carry the message and also carry out the message, which I read to mean we live it out. You know, they say sometimes, you know, we're the only big book, you know, or the first big book a person might see. So when we conduct ourselves, that's what they mean by attraction rather than promotion. You know, you can lay it out for someone and they may say, yeah, that's real good for you, and they go on. But if we just live our lives according to what we have learned in the rooms and practice the principles in our affairs. The big book talks, so let me skip a little bit. Generally, 12-step work, you know, carrying a message. I mean, a lot of people, a lot of speakers here talk about helping at the meeting and, you know, setting it up, and all of that's fine, and I know other people have said that, but I want to specifically say, because it interested me, I mean, I've been sober a while. I mean, I'll live without getting to every meeting in the world, you know. But what? Oh, I'm looking at the wrong page. Anyway, it talks about just the importance of showing up. As a person who has put even yesterday and today together, showing up is important, because we're the living evidence that whatever, you know, drunk rolls in, they can't refute. Here we are, we're sober, we showed up, we're taking part, and, you know, I'll opine a little bit here. I think we owe it to the program. I've been guilty of going on hiatus from meeting attendance, but if I'm really honest and I'm really grateful, I owe it to the people who came before me and the people who came after me to just show up and just be here. And like I said, be like that living evidence of, believe me, I couldn't stay sober for more than 3 days. I'm standing here before you sober 38 years plus. Before I came to the rooms, 3 days, and it was a miserable 3 days. Miserable. Ugh. But so I think that's an important aspect. In the big book, page 102, talks about this. Here's how they say it, because, you know, Bill Wilson, he was such a writer. He was so wonderful. He says, your job now is to be at the place where you may be of maximum helpfulness to others. So never hesitate to go anywhere if you can be helpful. You should not hesitate to visit the most sordid spot on earth on such an errand. Keep on the firing line of life with these motives, and God will keep you unharmed. So if we are doing what we need to do with the intent to be of use, we're going to be okay, because we're doing the work that we were given a new life to help do. Now that's kind of that on phase two, and I know I'm being very dense, but with material. And then the last part is practicing principles in all our affairs. We start moving into real life, okay? And Joe McHugh says, he makes mention about principles. And you say, well, what are these principles? You know, what the heck does that mean? So in the foreword of the 12 and 12, Bill says, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous are a set of principles, spiritual in nature, which, if practiced, will expel the obsession to drink. He said he thinks, according to Joe, he feels another way to say it is laws. And these are laws that have been created by something beyond men. And he said they are just as basic and unchanging as the law of gravity or the freezing point of water. If we can live by these principles, we will be peaceful and content. We will be free from the things that used to enslave us and make our lives miserable by following these principles, by looking at the steps, by incorporating them into our lives, by doing things like practicing being honest. Life on life's terms. So this is where I wrote all these notes, and I'm, like I said, I probably could do this for 3 weeks. But anyway, now comes the biggest, what about the 12 and 12 talks about, what about the biggest question yet? Can we love the whole pattern of living as eagerly as we do the small segment that we discover when we try to help an alcoholic? Can we practice love and tolerance, and I love this phrasing, in our sometimes deranged family lives that we bring to our AA group? And I know mine's certainly deranged, so you can make your own assessment. Can we have the same kind of confidence and faith in these people who have been infected and sometimes crippled by our own illness as we have had in our sponsors? Can we carry this spirit into our daily work and our responsibilities into the world at large? How shall we deal with success and failure? Can we accept and adjust to either without despair or over pride? Can we accept poverty or sickness? Can we steadfastly content ourselves with humbler yet sometimes more durable satisfactions when the shiny things aren't there for us? Have we alcoholics in AA got, or can we get, the resources to meet these calamities which come to so many? Can we now, with the help of God as we understand them, handle them as well and as bravely as our non-alcoholic friends do? Can we transform these calamities into assets, sources of growth? And then the book talks about two-stepping. Whoa, I'm really running out of time. Two-stepping, okay? If we're familiar with two-stepping, that's when we do 1 and 12 and we skip everything in between. And It's kind of an effort, in my mind, it's an effort to evade effort, and it's an effort to ease God out. And we know what ease God out stands for, right? That's E-G-O, that's ego. We think what we think. We cut ourselves off from the source. We cut ourselves off from our source. But when we don't two-step, when we really use the steps to live better and understand better and be in touch with our higher power, with our source, we find that this is where the stability comes in, the emotional security and the stability, because life makes more sense. Some of the things that we get insecure about money, if we do our work, it comes to us. That's been my experience. It might have been your experience, even on little levels, whenever we're willing to let go. You know, when we have a need, it gets met. Emotional security, who's going to be here for us? You know, and we sometimes want to either boss people around. If we're kind of unevolved and really haven't made contact with a God as we understand it and have that relationship, I'm naturally bossy to begin with. And, you know, one of the ways I might deal with this is to try to manipulate you and manage you and boss you around. Sometimes, you know, we try to control people by being really dependent. And I'm sure we've all known people who are just sinking swamps of need. And we might have tried that tactic ourselves, although being a sinking swamp of need has never really worked too well for me. Some people work that really well, but I'm not one of them. I'm more bossy. But, you know, and I want to talk a little bit about money in particular, because we worry about money. Money is a real thing, and sometimes I think we, in AA, get a little mixed up about money. You know, money is not a bad thing. You know, money is a tool. Money is how we get our needs met, how we get the work of the world done, how we accumulate, you know, things that are helpful and useful. And especially women get a little bit weird about money. So I'm a woman, so I feel I've been weird about it. But to me, what I've come to believe, and I share this thought with you, is that for me, money has meant freedom, it's meant choices, it's meant an opportunity to be of use, and it's meant opportunities to enjoy life and to maybe have others enjoy along with me. So far from being, you know, you hear all this, money's evil and blah, blah, blah. Well, I don't think that's true, okay? And I'll just opine on that. I'm going to say a contra, well, okay, because I know Kevin, like, lives for this stuff, right? One of the books that was a great influence on me, believe it or not, one of them was the AA's big book, and the other one was the philosopher Ayn Rand, and she talks about, you know, work and effort, and that it's okay, and that money is a tool, you know, and it's about, that's how I read that. So, yeah, Atlas Shrugged. My sponsor actually gave me Atlas Shrugged to read in the 80s. You know, it's been part of my long, strange trip in recovery. And, you know, at page 123 in the 12 and 12, I know I've mentioned it about the immaturity of the alcoholic. This is where it came from, 123. Apparently there was some doctors and psychologists were studying alcoholics when AA was quite young. And it wasn't immature. What they said was alcoholics tended to be childish, emotionally sensitive, and grandiose. So I was slightly misquoting, but still, I know, the same ugly picture. So we have to grow up, and the only way I grew up was by working through the steps and facing myself with as much honesty as I could muster at each phase that I was trying to muster. And a mature recovery is described like this: service gladly rendered, obligations squarely met, troubles well accepted or solved with God's help. The knowledge that at home or in the world outside, we are partners in a common effort. The well-understood fact that in God's sight, all human beings are important. That we are no longer isolated and alone in self-constructed prisons. The surety that we need no longer be square pegs in round holes, but we can fit and belong in God's scheme of things. These are the permanent and legitimate satisfactions of right living. You can read more about that in the 12 and 12. But that's our end game of living a life that we can deal with, that we can be happy and proud of. I do want to say a word. I still have a few words to say. About, we talked about two-stepping, and I want to talk a little bit about 13th stepping, okay? Okay, it's time and beyond time, all right? If we all know what 13th stepping means, trying to take advantage of a younger person in the program, particularly sexually. And I'm going to say this straight out. If you are a very new person and someone with some supposed time is trying to hit on you, I'm going to assure you they don't give a shit about you. They only care about themselves and whatever body part they're trying to work out their will on with you. Okay? And to my mind, we come into the rooms, and I know I did, and I'm so you all can't be that much different from me. In many ways, we come into the rooms as babies. That's why one of the old words for sponsee, which I hate that word, was a baby. You know, my first sponsor always called me her baby. And because I had no idea how to live, just like a little kid. So for someone to hit on you, or for you to hit on someone who's new, you're like picking on a kid, on a child. So, you know, what does that make you if you're someone who is hitting on a child? Okay? That's what I think about that topic. And I also think that I've pointed it out to people. Or seeing who's your sponsor and have a talk with their sponsor. I feel I have a responsibility, I think, to kind of nip that in the bud when I see that developing. You know, as adult citizens in the community, I think we're responsible for children and their safety, and as sober members of AA, I think we're responsible to protect the new girls and the new guys from being used inappropriately for something that might cause them, you don't know what that's going to cause to them. So, I think, you know, we need to step up, and I think that's part of carrying the message and practicing the principles, is we're not supposed to be about hurting people or manipulating people or using people selfishly or anything like that. So that's what I have to say about the 13th step. And finally, as if all that weren't enough, I have one last thing to say, and now you see why I said I could talk about this for like 2 weeks or 3 weeks. But page 178 in As Bill Sees It, Down to Earth. This is out of the AA's big book, but this is where I found it more easily. Those of us who have spent much time in the world of spiritual make-believe have eventually seen the childishness of it. This dream world has been replaced by a great sense of purpose, accompanied by a growing consciousness of the power of God in our lives. We have come to believe that He would like us to keep our heads in the clouds with Him, but our feet ought to be firmly planted on earth. That is where our fellow travelers are, and that is where our work must be done. These are the realities for us. We have found nothing incompatible between a powerful spiritual experience and a life of sane and happy usefulness. So, we close our meeting in my home group with the responsibility statement, and I don't know if people know it, but I'm going to say it, and then that'll be my last words. And the AA responsibility statement goes like this: I am responsible. When anyone, anywhere, reaches out for help, I want the hand of AA to always be there, and for that I am responsible. So thank you all. And thank you for letting me do this. This has been a great project for me. I'm so grateful for the opportunity. So it's 7:27, so if anyone has any questions.
All right. Thanks, Leslie. Do we have any questions for Leslie? It's your last chance to stump her.
Okay. All right, then.
Jim, alcoholic.
Hi, Jim.
Leslie, a bunch of meetings I go to up in Canada close with the responsibility statement. Yeah. Anyways, that wasn't the question.
It's just a wonderful quick statement, you know, of what we do.
So with spiritual awakening, do you tend to realize that spiritual awakening maybe after, like down the road a little ways? Because I'll realize something, like, oh yeah, that happened like then.
Oh, truly.
Wow, I just had a spiritual awakening.
Yeah, right. It's, you know, there is a philosopher, because I am very smart, you know, Kierkegaard says that life must be lived forward, but is only fully understood backwards. And that's been true for, I mean, obviously that's a kind of a universal human thing. Sometimes we need the time and perspective. I know I've seen things where I was frustrated, and why didn't this happen this way, and the timing was off, and it just really, God's timing was much better than mine. I just didn't quite get it. So, yeah, I think that's true. But what I get from it, what I get now, some of the difference is I'm a little more willing to kind of grin and bear it and go with it and let things shake out. You know, it doesn't cure me of all my emotions, but I've got a little more willingness to let things play out.
An alcoholic, and I love that responsibility statement too. We use that at Pine Grove Group all the time. Couple questions. Have you ever taken someone to a meeting with you that had been drinking or was drunk?
Yes. Okay. Yes, there was a guy who I had gotten, so he was part of like the people who were getting sober when I was, and he went out and got drunk, and I dragged him to this meeting, and it was just like, yeah, I kind of learned that's not a good move. You know, I didn't drink, but I mean, I think he was like trying to be accommodating to me, or who knows, you know, how guys think. But I was young. I was young then too, okay? You know, with full disclosure, I mean, I was 26, so I'm not like the old bag you
see. If I knew what they think, I wouldn't be here.
Well, you know, but anyway, he was like passing out, and he just wasn't getting it, you know. And I remember also one of my home groups, I'll never forget this night. The meeting was going on, and the speaker was speaking, and at this meeting you had to go down like half a flight of steps to get into the meeting room, and this guy comes spilling in, walking, and he throws his arms open, and he says, I'm back like a wrecked ship. And he was crap-faced drunk, and, you know, what happened was the young men, they kind of hustled him into a seat and gave him some coffee and just kind of said, okay, pal, you can stay if you keep it down. Other than that, we got to throw you out. So,
yeah,
I mean, if we can't have drunks in AA, why are we here?
I feel better about that, because I have taken some women who have been, you know, a little altered. And the other thing, question about people that you sponsor. When do you fire people that you sponsor, or what? How do you handle when they don't want to do what you want them to do?
I kind of let them go. I mean, that's what
you just do. You just let them disappear, or do you have a time to say,
"You need to
get a different sponsor. I don't think I'm doing you any good."
I've done both, you know, and one, she just never wanted to come around and drifted off, and I thought, well, I don't chase you, you know, that's not my job. You have my number, I'm here, I'll respond to you, but I don't believe in chasing people who don't want to be chased. It's not productive. And it's okay. The book is very clear. It's okay. If they don't want what we have, then, you know, there's a bunch of people out there who may. and we can't spend our time on that. In fact, I had a quote that I forgot to read from Kevin's favorite drunk in L.A., Clancy. Yeah. Where he talks about, you know, if you went to the AIDS ward and told people, you know, if you go to a couple meetings and do a few things that might be a little weird, you're going to be okay, and they would do anything. And you tell a drunk you just need to go to a couple meetings and, you know, start looking at yourself, and they're like, nah, I can't go, I can't cross the street for that stuff. And it's just true, you know. This is really something if you want it. And our duty is met if we present how we got better, how Brenda got better. You know, how did Brenda use this program to live her life better? How did Brenda look into the book, and what did you gain from it? How did Leslie, how did Pat, you know, what did we do? And how are we sober here today? That's what we have to give. That's really all we have to give. But that's the most important thing, because it cuts past everything. You're welcome.
You're my favorite.
Oh, and only until next week, right? Oh, wait, that's Kevin, right? Good. Does anyone else?
No.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie.
Thank you.
A certificate for you from the group.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.